Okay, starting with our work session, it is Tuesday, July 21st, 2020, at 6:03 PM. We are meeting at the Service Community Center. And anything on our agenda today is discuss and review the items.
What is that? You're full of electricity.
So as we go over this, we are expecting residents to show up for item number eight. So if we get into a great work session, I'd like to keep it light. So we can have a lot of sessions to help me. Other than that, we're pretty solid. I'm gonna spray.
Well, then, why don't we start with seven? Just to finish this.
How is the golf course still dominating our city council? I say that as city council.
All right, so when this pulls up, you're going to see an aerial image of hole 16. Maybe that's not very bright. There's a few, we can refer to them as hot spots on the golf course where we see more we can anticipate the possibility of calm incidents, where a golf ball doesn't go on its intended course and interferes with private property in some manner. Hole 16 being one of the primary culprits. I would start to name them as we go about the course. I'd say, you have hole number one, which you have the possibility of driving off the hillside, and then there's homes there on the south of the course. Then you kind of avoid most of the problems until you come up to hole number 11, and it's a little par three, that at the very just past the green, there's a little home. There's some homes there, and they're probably, what, like 50, 60 feet from the green?
Yeah.
They're not that far from the green. Then you go back up onto the hillside here, and you don't really have any problems. So you come back down to hole 16, which we have some homes that are, if you're a terrible golfer like me, they're in the path, they're basically half of my ball. But here you see the tee boxes for hole 16. And they're angled, look, from an aerial, they look like they're angled straight at these homes. But Greg and his staff have actually angled the, if you go out there, there's tee markers on the tee box that they don't aim you towards these palms, but they aim you towards the center of this fairway here. However, some golfers just line up and smack the ball where the tee box is kind of aiming. So we're trying to do what we can to get them to aim towards the middle of the course. But this all stems from an incident that occurred on this hole in that the homeowner here, adjacent to the course, has had a number of windows broken. She has solar panels on her home and they've taken a beating over the years. Not to mention that a wicked cook will send the ball into Canyon Road, and we've had cars hit on Charming Long Canyon Road here as well. Not to mention you have the driving range, if you're not already aware of there's an issue there. So we have a number of hot spots throughout the golf course. Well, we've always approached this problem in a sense that the driver or the golfer is responsible for the flight of the ball. Leave it back. We'll assist residents or people, those persons affected, will assist them to try to help them find golfers. Sometimes that's successful, many times it's not. And in the case where you get a home, you're kind of left at the mercy of the whether or not the homeowner is there. But if they're not home, and somebody does knock, they may think, oh, well, you had your chance and you missed it. I don't know. There's lots of instances where windows are broken and homeowners are just about to kind of figure it out on their own. Now, there is some, I do believe this, I'm not proposing this snowball golf ball play tonight to waive all responsibility of a homeowner that lives adjacent to a driving range, especially if they live adjacent to a fairway. But I do think that the city can do something to help these residents in these types of situations. And not help in the, and not to do it in a way that kind of absolves them of any responsibility that they have, but to make sure that we're doing our part. And I kind of refer to it internally as the good neighbor policy. But what it is we would set up a line item in the Bell Fund that would be closing initially $5,000 that would go towards these types of plans for windshields, for windows, for solar panels, for fences, possibly, whatever it may be. But the idea being that it's sometimes, there's always the looming threat of litigation, and sometimes paying for something is a lot cheaper than paying a credit. And that is in no way saying that the city's at fault, it's just saying that we recognize that these incidents happen. So the proposal is, and you can see the code in your packet, but I have to retract from something I said last council meeting. I indicated that I wasn't going to include the windshields into this code. But as I approached the code, I thought, you know what, this first year, let's do it all. Let's throw in everything and see what happens. If we limit the liability, the council recognizes we're setting aside $5,000 once the well's dry, there's nothing left. We limit our exposure there, but we can also kind of gauge the scope of the problem. I'm quite frankly, I'd be honest, I'd be surprised if you have $5,000 claims, given the limit on claims payouts. But this no-fault golf ball claim does, in its purpose, it says, it is the purpose of this chapter to compensate persons for vehicle damage loss, and we're going to make a change here, and damage to private property sustained as a result of damages from a golf ball hit from the Cedar Hills Golf Club onto a public highway or road or into an adjacent private property, regardless of fault within the restrictions, limitations, and other provisions of this chapter. It goes on to establish the process by which that person can seek remediation from the city. It would not be staff that would be reviewing these claims. We would actually ask that the city attorney review these claims. And then we set up forth the criteria for reimbursement, which I think is important. I think this is probably where the crux of the conversation is, and that's where I'd like most of your feedback. But the follow-up, so it says that in section B, it's kind of, I don't know which one you have, but there's some numbering issues here on this one, but it's either 4 or it's B. It says the following result in a denial of an application. So just because you had an incident does not mean that it's automatically covered. The loss could be fully covered by private insurance. In that case, we would not be paying for it. The applicant otherwise ineligible under the terms of this chapter, a loss caused by an irresponsible act of the applicant, applicant's agent, or a member of the applicant's business or household. The loss of eligibility is unsubstantiated. The loss caused by intentional acts of vandalism or malicious intent. The 10 loss caused by an individual who is not a paying patron of the golf course. For example, we have a window that was broken on the course. I think I may have mentioned this before, but the window was broken up here on these halls. That's quite a ways away from any play or any golf play. These are the nearest tee boxes, and it's honestly like 1,000 feet. However, there were kids out there selling balls, and they had a baseball bat. That when we got a call from the person that had the broken window, we sent a pro shop kid out. There was nobody on 18, and there was nobody on 17. So there were no golfers in the area. So in this case, this would be one of those situations where I'm sorry, that the loss cannot be substantiated that it resulted from a golfer. Similarly, I think that they have to make similar claims with windshields. They have to be notified by the city immediately. But this is where we're going with this. In order to pay for this, we're suggesting that this initial approach would be that we, in the next council meeting or in the future council meeting, probably in August, we do a budget line amendment or do some budget adjustments. We add a line item where we add this no fault claim and we have $5,000 to this. Initially, we would not be asking for anything to change in terms of horse prices or green fees, but approaching next year, depending on where we are and how those claims go, we may come to the council and say, look, we want to raise green fees by 50 cents on 9 holes and a dollar on 18. And I recognize that will bring in a lot more money than $5,000 that this line item is set for, or that we're recommending. But what we're proposing is that the difference there kind of be set aside for mitigation projects. So if you recognize that we have a hot spot and that we're continually paying out claims, you know, rather than continue to pay out claims, let's set up a system where, you know, on hole 16, we can use some of the excess money that we've collected over here to plant trees, to put up small fencing, maybe it's 25-foot wood poles of fencing that will catch fall before they hit these homes. In that way, the idea is that over time, if you're doing your mitigation projects correctly and prudently, that you stop having incidents. That's the plan there. So this kind of leads into the next conversation with the driving range, but I'm not going to get into the driving range because I know the residents are curious about what we say there. But this is the idea, and it would apply to the driving range as well. In the driving range, you have cars that get hit occasionally. We have spoken to our attorney. Look, if a person gets hit by a golf ball, you're in a different realm. You're not dealing with a $5,000 claim, you're dealing with a much different claim. And so that's where your liability insurance kicks in. And we do have that, but we wouldn't self-insure on that for my item. So with that, I mean, what questions, feedback, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
I have some. Do we know, like, better golf courses to do this?
Some. The code actually just comes from Murray.
Okay.
Of course. So we're not the only ones that do this. I looked at some of their payouts. I mean, some years they got zero payouts, some years they had $1,200 in payouts. It ranges, obviously, based on that. And we've had a high number of golfers, so this year could be a heavy year if we had it earlier in the year. And that's why it's hard to gauge how much to set aside because we've never done this before. So it's a matter of saying, okay, we're going to just set $5,000 aside and see what happens. And if it's woefully inadequate, we'll be addressed that next year. But if it's shown to be sufficient, then we can budget $5,000.
But if we start it and then it does end up being pretty expensive, our only recourse is to add on.
You can look at raising it in the future, and that's why I think that green fee change is so critical. Now, the more you eat into that green fees money, the harder it is to do mitigation projects. But I do think that has to be an essential component, so people will recognize that, okay, you're collecting more money than you're paying out, and that's fine, because then we should be able to point to projects that we're doing and say, well, here's how we're addressing these issues throughout the course.
I like that idea. With the attorney having to review, Does that come out of the five thousand? Is time to have to review all those claims? Yeah, probably. Just trying to figure out where that went. And then are we trying to figure out, are we really limiting our exposure if we run out of money? So if we run out of money and then the precedent is that we pay, then we're someone going to sue us if we're out of money? Is everyone saying we pay for everybody else's claim? I hand it to the end of the bell. Does that make us more liable?
I don't think that it makes you liable, especially where you're just having people say, look, we are in no way, shape, or form obligated to pay these claims out. This is simply a good neighbor policy. And then the money's gone. The code says the money's gone. You know, we're not obligated to dig deep into the coffers to rectify every wrong that occurs, especially when the city is not the one that's primarily liable. So I would not suggest that would add liability to the city, but I would defer to Hiram and Craig on that.
Yeah, no, the experience in other cities is that it would not, it doesn't add liability, but it's going to be
just kind of a good neighbor policy rule. For the most part, what we've been seeing with the golf course is that these amounts are very used all the way up. Nonetheless, yeah, what would end up happening is anytime there was a payout, you would have a release for it, right? And that release for it was say expressly that the golf course is not viable in the same way it gets called. And that's expressly important in itself. So I respect the way we acknowledge that we're not changing all whatsoever on the fair. This is in the paper. And then they would sign the release for it.
Think about it like
for our library reimbursement, we set aside $1,000 a year, which we provide a library reimbursement, I want to say about 200 households in our city. And once it's gone, so if you're the 200 first household to come in, you won't receive a library reimbursement. And there's no precedent saying we did it for 200 households,
yeah.
So we have to do it for me. It's just the money's been spent and
So I guess another way to think about it, please throw this out there, is some of you are on the council, some of you are not on council in 2017 when we met. You woke up in the morning and Morgan was just chewing the bits and we flooded people's basements through the sewer back, right? Well, we paid out claims to those residents and they signed similar agreements declaring the city not at fault because that was the same resolution that the insurance company came with. You're not involved here, so you're in no way, shape, or form legally obligated to pay them anything. But in a sense of trying to be good neighbors and recognizing our role in the community, we did pay out money. And so we have, in a similar sense, set aside a claim line item in our water sewer fund. Now it's much greater because the damage is obviously much greater, but It's a similar concept where once that money's gone, we're still not obligated to pay anything out if the line item is out of line.
And is it going to be a flat fee? Is it going to be a per kind of basis?
That's a good question. The code is right now it's written as $300 per vehicle and $1,000 per incident.
So that house or up to?
Up to, excuse me.
So that. Houses on that?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we've been out windows and just kind of getting a sense, and windows are expensive. And many times, one problem we're running into kind of get bit and comps is that they won't take a job unless it's a certain number of windows. It needs a threshold of a certain number of windows. So that can be a little bit of a challenge. But then the third component there is. No payments for this chapter may exceed any of the following: A, $300 per vehicle; B, $1,000 per incident; or C, annual appropriation of funds regardless of the number of claims. So we're very clear up front that once the money's gone, money's gone. But I do feel that $5,000 at those rates will cover our claims.
But it could be like 5,000 then.
Yeah. Good.
So I feel like we start out with 5,000. Just given our history, we probably don't want to use that.
Yeah, I would say the most incidents we have are actually windshield related, right?
Problem is most are actually our building, our windows.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We also cover our windows that get broken occasionally. So we're also victims in this. I think our windows are probably broken more than the next case.
For sure.
The $5,000, like, there's no rhyme or reason there. If the council feels like that's not enough, I mean, I encourage you to raise that to 8 or whatever. I mean, we just have to find a way to pay for it.
I have a feeling that, though, if someone comes...
Grab that mic, it's hard to hear.
If someone comes to a meeting, I have a feeling our council will just, pay for it. So,
I'll say you're too sympathetic.
I just remember what happened at Morgan. I mean, I don't know how they're going to go, we paid for these other people, but we're not going to pay for you. So I would just say that's a placeholder that you're shooting for a target, not higher than that, but I don't know why you would necessarily stop there.
Well,
if it's a reasonable request. I think
that's an interesting.
I just think we try to be reasonable, and if for some reason it doesn't appear reasonable, you would deny it. But if it's 5,500 one year, I just don't see why you would turn it down.
I agree, and the reality is if we're assessing it extra dollar or every 18 holes, we're going to raise a lot more than that anyway. And I know we want to do the mitigation projects, but if we have a bad year this year where it exceeds 5, I can imagine this
and that's all up to you.
And we try to have a savings. It's not just what's in the budget. We try to have fund balance for these kind of things. So it's not super stressful to make these decisions. And that, I mean, unless you're asking for like $1 million, then it's stressful. But that, like even library stuff, we're not going to turn anyone down, sorry. We're just going to let people do it. I mean, it might have been the past when we first started.
We've never actually had enough people turn in their.
But it might have been close some years, but we're not going to turn anyone down. We're going to treat everyone the same. That's just how it is. So that's at least from the finance side.
But the code does allow you to.
Yes. If,
based on the.
If we were desperate,
yeah. You can draw the line in the sand saying, no, given the strength of finances this year, you have that ability. But if you have the ability to be compassionate, too. So it's really up to you.
It's easier to be compassionate to raise your fees.
Yeah.
So I've got a very starting point for my
I will tell you, I met with the neighbor that has broken the window and I wrote this policy with her, and I was very encouraged by the response that I saw, that she felt that the city was finally, it wasn't an acknowledging that we were the problem, but finally saying, let's do something about it.
And I like that the attorneys are with the side
that you're here. Yeah, you guys
know who that is. Yeah, it's not us. It's them, and I appreciate that. So when it comes to me, you won't see the hiring.
Who's this guy?
Did you hear that? What was the thing with the timeline?
Did they
need to let us know? Like, does it stay immediately for windshields? And even for houses, I thought
it was
30 days.
Right.
I thought that was a long time.
Breeze was 60 days. Okay. I felt like 60 was too long. 30 to me was half of 60, so yeah, it can't be immediate. Because if you're on vacation, it's 5 days, and you left that morning, and you're gone 2 weeks, well, that's no fault of your own.
I think 30 days is generous.
So maybe, and you can maybe word that in saying that if it's a vehicle, you have, even a vehicle could be hit in a private lot, it's not parked in a vehicle. So I was going to say, you could have that one be more immediate, but you still can't run in the same office.
I also think that as we're getting this established, people aren't going to know about it, and so they're going to be really upset if we say we've got 5 days, and they have no idea this policy existed, and said they come in on the 7th or 8th day, and we say too bad. You've got to get some time for people to be aware of it.
I think there might be some people that check with their insurance or their homeowner insurance first, and if they're not getting taken care of that way, then they're like, well, maybe I should go to the city. So I mean, there might be some steps that they initially do.
What about windshield thing bothers you? If you really could get a windshield broken anywhere from here to get it replaced.
I agree, and that was my initial hesitation with adding windshields to it as well. And ultimately, I resolved to just propose that let's throw in windshields and see what happens. And that's why this initial year, I think $5,000 is important. Because if it goes completely sour and everyone just says, hey, if you have a hit on your windshield that looks like it's from a golf ball, just go up to see what's located for it.
Yeah.
We don't want that, you know? And that's why I think there has to be some component that limits your exposure, saying, well, apparently, you know, 90 cars got hit this year, which is absurd, but we look at claims, and then we reevaluate this policy. But initially, I'm inclined now to let's include windshields and just see what happens year one. And if it is a bad policy, we'll revisit that.
And generally speaking, we hear from somebody on the end.
Yes. Very immediate.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. I've been in the workshop, like, the neighborhood.
right in there, like came right in.
So I don't think you would come later.
I would say
only if they were, if the carburetor radio was not occupied at the moment of when they say. Like they're walking into their carburetor, even then maybe carburetor crew is at all any worse car. Any other questions I can answer on this?
Sorry, I have a ton tonight, I don't know why. So on the $1,000, is a flat rate of $1,000, or are we going to look at what the car cost, or are we going to look at, are you going to use your homeowners, are you going to use your insurance, and your deductible is $300, you're going to bank $700? I know with my cat, my husband loves that topic too, but.
No, and maybe we can use the verbiage here to maybe more clear that the value of what's being replaced is not going to exceed the payment. Payment's not going to exceed the value of what's being replaced. So, in one instance, if they broke a window and they realized, hey, this is the third time this window's broken, I'm just going to upgrade this window to be a certain type of glass that's more tempered glass. I read somewhere that all glass has some tempered windows. Is that the case now?
It's only in certain areas.
Okay. So let's say they upgrade that. Well, the state's not paying for the upgrade, right? Or maybe we broke a windshield and they're like, well, this is the perfect time to get my window. We're not paying for that lady. So there are some limitations there.
It does spell out this policy that the reduction will be, there will be a reduction of payment if the loss is partially covered by private insurance or the party responsible for the loss. We can provide proof of whatever you're paying out. So that is in 1-14-6E.
That's these numbers here are needing to be categorized.
I mean, can we specify that we're not paying for upgrades to the original damage or whatever?
That the reimbursement may not exceed
Are they getting a bid? Are we getting a bid? Are we going to pay for someone who goes and gets it replaced themselves and then comes to us?
We could probably take the time to get a bid. Initially, I would say, yeah, we probably won't bid. And then as we become more attuned to the price, we might be able to look at it as a business.
We may be able to negotiate, like, revert, like, Joe Pankas, Park Mountain, which they all, or what's the price?
Yeah.
But it's my understanding because we don't have a relationship with that homeowner, we cannot require them to use one of our
vendors.
It's not like a car insurance where you have a shop that you can say it's a recommend, but they say no, I don't think it's going to be used. You can say we're only doing this for our company.
Right.
Yeah, can't park something.
Well,
yeah.
And we can't use the same company again as a fly. It's kind of like tow trucks. Where a city can't contract one tow truck company and exclude all of the others. They have to cycle through a list of tow trucks that want to service the city for traffic issues. And I think this would be the same thing where we couldn't just say, hey, this is our vendor, you have to use them. We would have to open it up to any entity that wanted to provide that service.
Check the gentleman you call, I've seen the dollars. We just get the payout that they once you had at least in the city, you don't pay the vendor for that. Say,
yes,
we say your price is $250.
Yeah.
You go so they're still contracting with the vendor. We're not. We're reimbursed on direct city to the resident.
And we just be giving them an amount that we might get bid and say, well, this is bid is, here you go.
Right.
Higher whatever you want.
Right.
So the only thing they should keep in the file is a picture of the actual damage because. Yeah, 6 months later they could have taken the money and then come back and say, well, that would have been damaged if you didn't look.
It's the same picture.
The same picture, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone can do that, but you
know. You got the plan for that though. I think that's a good idea. Thank you. It's supposed to be better that they don't.
Typically really keeping like this. So how do you do that?
I think it's a great idea. I think it's similar to what I hate and do.
I'm actually surprised more golf courses are kind of situated in the neighborhood. We're not even. All the golf courses I've golfed, and I've golfed a limited number, there's some where I just am stressing the whole time I'm getting a house. Ours is not one of those. there's a few, especially down at St. George, where it feels like there's just a fairway and you get straight or you get home. And so I'm surprised that the golf courses don't take this type of approach in getting their golf.
Well, some of those, the HOAs take one of the golf courses. Yeah, so does the Glen Cedars, is it Cedars HOA?
No.
They don't have any kind of coverage?
They don't. They don't really even acknowledge that they're a golf course in their 1600.
No, it doesn't say anything about being a golf course. Really?
So, just I'm wondering, part of this, if we have a consistent thing like, I don't know, 16 and 18, be an issue. We haven't got any of those broken across the line. I mean, we might consider putting up those 20-foot sections. And don't we still have the leftover?
We're almost out.
We actually donated some to the neighbor here. So this is in house got hit, then a day later, the gentleman here was in the backyard, he got hit. We actually donated some net netting because he could put netting up.
But they put it up.
Not yet, because he's only had it for
a
week and a half.
Just for his kids.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm thinking. That's the only area that I know of consistently got issues.
That one, yes. And there may be some litigation that you just can never solve. Hook onto Canyon Road. I'm not going to put hundreds of yards of netting along Canyon Road, because that one really doesn't happen very often.
So the trees would go where? I'm thinking about somebody planted a tree in my backyard that might not be doing that.
Along here, we've talked about planting trees in this area.
That'd be great.
What that would do is at least, and I can only speak for me, but when I'm teeing up and I see a tree immediately, right here, I'm obviously getting a little bit more wind that it might overcorrect.
Right on, maybe it works.
But then, correspondingly, we would have to remove, sorry Mike, your tree here that you aimed for. That would have to go, because I think in a similar effect, people are trying to drive to the west of this tree in order to not hit it, but then overcompensating and then landing over here. And then we can also plant trees in a manner here that doesn't really obstruct view, but will catch balls as they're kind of slicing.
That was my question. Can we do trees so that they try to aim for the middle? I don't want to aim for Canyon Road either, because we've got trees near the houses, and now they're aiming away from those trees.
Yeah, I actually believe that.
I don't think they aim for the road just because of the big berm.
It's quite.
I
feel like there's not many cars get here. There, I think they get hit on 12. So,
on 12?
12. I've never seen one on 16, but 12 I've seen one.
So if I were to draw a straight line between these tee boxes and these homes, we would want the trees planted on, like I say, the west side of that blue line.
Yeah.
And those would be the ones that would, because everything else is in play of the golf course technically. You can always swing it because it's so cool.
I mean, maybe you could take that tree there on the right side and just really bend it up. Leave it there, but right, really.
It's kind of a bushy tree.
Yeah, just really bend it. Give it a good bend.
On that side, pick it up.
If you actually look, I don't know if you can zoom into that, but the house on the very end right there, the Sanchez home, the very, very last one, the N16, you can see that they planted a bunch of big tall trees there.
Yeah, right here. Mm-hmm.
So they knew what they were doing, and that's kind of what we're shooting for. And Mike, to your point, I think we even discussed moving the trees right there on the left side of the fairway, which is kind of an aiming spot for some people, but it's where people hit. Replanting those, but it doesn't make sense to replant.
The right side is where we're looking, that big tree right
now. Yes, on your right? Yeah. It's hard to replant them.
You're going to go to the house. Let's give it a real tight thinning and haircut so it's not super wishy, but it's still.
We're trying that out. We can try that before we tear it out. The problem with trees is that you have to be patient with that. Their effectiveness is over time, not in the future.
Right. And I'm just saying, let's, before we just go whack it out, let's in another area. You know, that's doing not now in the fall, it's right now, 2 years.
Let's get a robust discussion. Anything else on this one?
The tree idea.
So those would be the types of innovation projects we'd be looking at most of the time.
Or trees, very.
Yeah, not the trees before, I think that we'd be more next to people. You know, I go on the call for something in New York, and they just told us, you know, buy ourselves some nets, and we do recognize our office community down there, and they were like, here's a great resource for some nets in your backyard, so.
That's normal.
Everybody lives there by their own.
That's normal, of course.
That is.
I'd rather see trees, but I think it's a nice for everybody.
Did we ever find out if the HOA will allow them to install nets?
No, I don't know.
I have a hard time believing they will.
If there's anything supposed to be against it. They would have to make a distinction between fencing and netting.
If they're in that store, I think the catch is there is.
I think legally there's a definition difference.
Yeah.
Because they're very limited on the fencing, as you can correct me, they have an actual draw iron. But if it's not technically fencing, it's considered netting. I like semantics, but.
The netting is still open, because that's the whole point of our fencing, that it's like fencing and netting.
That's part of it. Yeah, of course, it would work, so it's geared to the change to the CCMR, so you can have the whole community vote and everything, but get the.
Mayor, 6:40, you want me to try to tackle another topic, or you want to get it out?
Is there anything you want to do about 5 minutes?
Maybe you'd like to.
What about the ADUs? That should be. ADUs.
Oh, the ADUs. Yeah. Yeah, ADU. 2 years ago, we passed accessory dwelling unit code that allows, we recognize the gerontology community, and we wanted to, back in 2018, we wanted to reduce the amount of hurdles that people had, felt like they had to jump through in order to get a registered ADU. It might be a hurdle calling the city all the time saying, hey, this person has an apartment, is it legal? And back then, I'd say, no, because we have no registered apartments with the city. Even though we recognize that they exist, nobody's ever jumped or moved to register. 2 years later, we're registering. Got an application on Sunday evening that somebody's registering our apartment, which is good. And you know, the barriers to entry were there was a requirement to pay impact fees on these units, which to me was, again, a robust discussion internal to staff, but to me that was really interesting that you're not giving them a second sewer line or second utility connection, so I didn't like that rationale. But it really should be easy for them to comply with simple measures. And it also, because it also helps the city in that it helps us meet our affordable housing goals with the state. And if you look at the menu of options the city can comply with in terms of an affordable housing plan, out of there's 15 options, and we can theoretically do 3, maybe 4 of them, just given our demographics, given where we are, given our build up. So we wanted to really make it easy to be able to register their apartments. I think it's slowly working, but it did have a 2-year registration period after which, if we found that you had a registered apartment that was not registered, it could be up to a $500 fine. Given everything that's going on, staff is recommending that 2-year deadline at the end of this month, so about 10 days from now. Staff is recommending that extension be granted another year be added to that to go through this fiscal year, so through June 30th of this fiscal year, to give people a little bit more additional time to register their apartments. Just give it everything that the staff thinks may not be on the forefront of these plans.
I think that some of the qualifications are a little too stringent.
Which one?
Well, for example, we kind of retrofitted our basement, built a wall, moved the stove, you know, put a stove on without a contractor coming in ourselves, and so it's kind of past qualifications to be our son lived there, so I'm not worried about it. Instead of myself. But I think there are a lot of ADUs in the city that are not going to be able to pass and be able to permit to be an ADU. I wonder if there's some sort of mechanism where somebody needs to be rentable, and if they've been there in a long time, or is there any way that we can make it easier for people? I'm not gonna wreck my house and I'm really worried about registering yet, but I know a lot of people depend on that income to be able to live in their home. And is there any way that we can make it easier for them to do that?
There's always a way. It really just depends on your willingness to where you draw the line in the sand. So you took those requirements and you think they're part of now.
Oh, I know, it was about
very much. But some of the biggest challenges are that people have pressure within their homes, and you want to make sure that the ADU that they're renting out to somebody is safe, right? So that's why you have to jump through certain building code requirements in terms of was the work done properly. And that's really where I think, as I'm understanding your question, that's really what crux of the matter is here, is that you have to be able to ensure that the home that you're saying is a legal apartment is a safe apartment as well. Because we're not looking at the safety aspect of it, then why do we even care? So you have to work and develop a plan with the building department and how they work with those situations. I know people have come forward and we work with them on saying submit plans, submit proofs. And, you know, there's certain times that I love grandfathering in, but in these cases, there might be some instances where somebody rented out a basement or renting out something that really shouldn't be rented out.
I agree.
And so there's a fine line there. I'm trying not to commit to anything right now, if you can tell. But I think that's a discussion we're having with the building department.
Well, and I think it's hard to grandfather in. It's easy to grandfather in if you did not have code saying that it's requirements, but we did, it's ignored it. So it's hard to say we're going to grandfather in even though you know you violated our own building code.
Yeah. If someone could come in and inspect what's already been done and say, oh, this is done properly, even though they never run out of plans or they just, you know, say no.
That's why I say that. I mean, that's what we do. Right? That's what we do. Yeah, we try to, we don't even inspect it, do we? The ADUs, when they register, it's really self inspection.
They don't have plans to submit to the city.
They have to submit some plans, but we're not physically in the ADU as far as I'm aware.
So if the home has been inspected, let's say the basement apartment, and that basement was finished and had a certificate of occupancy, we do not do an inspection. If the home did not have a finished basement, but then they finished it without a permit, then yes, we do require plans to be submitted and inspections to be completed.
After the fact, yes.
Okay.
Well, because in that case, they brought code by finishing their basement without inspection, right? I just do it a tiny remodel and
that's regardless of whether or not there's an apartment there or not.
Right. So I'm saying they brought code regardless of it.
And in many cases, there should be a huge billing from them just because many homes prepaid basement during the initial billing plans, okay?
Everything after about 2001,
all this,
yeah, pretty much all the city paid for the basement to be finished at the time of the original construction. They just didn't finish it at that time.
So those building permit fees have been paid, they just need to submit the plan.
We have been requiring that they pay a permit renewal fee, $50. We renew the original permit. Unless, of course, they're remodeling and doing a whole different design. If it's being constructed as per the original plan approval, then yes, $50. And inspection fees.
So in the case of somebody had a building basement finished and they just applied for an ADU, we have record of CFO in their basement, and they just check off, and they swear, they sign an affidavit saying, I swear by these, that this is correct. We don't go into the home and inspect it in those cases.
No, we do not, no.
So we need to be recorded in that.
So. You have a, that's kind of on you to make sure that's not right. It's not very quite complicated.
So we did the ER check, are we gonna do anything to really push that education thing so we can, this can have some teeth in here? Because I'm sympathetic for people who can't live in their homes without it, but at the same time, it's a, for a lot of people, it's a business. I know quite a few people who, it's just a business, it's supplemental income, and or they bought their house depending on that, and I still feel like it's a business, and there's things you need to jump through if it's not for your family member. If someone's gonna pay you to live there, I think there's usually gotta jump through for that. So I'd like to see the team in it, or like, if we're gonna extend it, and, you know, let them have new people, and if they decide to just ignore the registration.
Well, let me, I think two things to that. One, to me, when you extend something like this, it makes it very hard to come back and say, I didn't know, because we've been pushing this in newsletters and on Facebook and some of the website. It's been a weekly advance, too. But we've been pushing this out for 2 years. Not every week, not every newsletter, but it's been pushed out. You extend it a year, you lengthen the grace period, and you give them more time, you know, in a year, let's say they still haven't done it. At that point, we're not going to hire somebody to just, you know, kick down doors and say, show me your ADU. We're not going to take that tactic. We're not going to take the approach like that. But if we see an ADU being promoted online, or somebody brings it to our attention saying, hey, my neighbor's got an ADU, and they are parking all up and down the street, at parties at night, what can the city do about it? At that point, then we would say, hey, look, your grace period's over. You didn't register, or you know, you're at fault here. So there is some teeth to that. Conversely, we still have to work with people that want to create the ADU. This doesn't punish them at all, but just those that fail to register. Anything else on that?
Is there a fee to register?
$35?
So is it like what hoops are we thinking that we're keeping them from having to jump through over this fee with COVID, like $35? Is that like is it something they have to do to get ready to get
No, I just I think that the last few months people have been preoccupied. Staff as well. So I'm inclined to err on the side of the residents and what's experienced.
And it benefits us to get as many people to connect with the community. Right now, while the state is offering parents compliant, eventually they're going to start punishing them if they're not. And so we're going to ask them. So,
yeah. And like I said, we're really limited in what we can do in terms of affordable housing. We're making a lot of assumptions that all ADUs are considered affordable housing. I've seen what some people rent there for, and it's a cap.
Right, but we don't have to show them that.
We don't have to show them that. We're just saying we've allowed the ordinance, but you know, the free market has dictated that this is the price of a rental in Cedar Hills. That is beyond the purview of the city council.
Sometimes I just think that the fine or the risk of a fine is motivation for people. I know I pay my bills and have late fees first, just human nature. So we can keep educating that at some point, if you don't say there could be a consequence, there's just no motivation to register. Thank you. I'll send them into the council meeting. So someone wants to make a motion to close for the session. I'm with the reader of the session. Motion made by Councilor Anderson. Is there a second?